The headlines: Tehran hosting a conference on Afghan neighbors. Iran says Afghanistan needs to install a government that is all-inclusive. Beijing rejects Washington's call for including Taiwan in UN institutions as simply unworkable. China says Taiwan is part of China, and only sovereign states can join the UN. And protesters in northwest England want to see an Israeli arms company shut down for complicity in war crimes against Palestinians. Hello and welcome, everybody, from our headquarters here in the Iranian capital, Tehran. We begin this hour in Tehran, where a one-day conference of Afghan neighbors is underway as we speak. The foreign ministers of six neighboring states plus Russia are attending the event. A while ago, Iran's foreign minister, Hossein Amir Abdollahian, made opening speech. There, he called on the participants to throw their weight behind an all-inclusive government in Afghanistan. He said the current problems are the outcome of years of U.S. disastrous conduct in Afghanistan. UN Chief Antonio Guterres, who also virtually addressed the conference, called for a unified approach towards the Afghan crisis. Top diplomats from Afghanistan's neighboring countries, namely China, Tajikistan, Pakistan, Turkmenistan, and Uzbekistan, in addition to Russia, have all delivered speeches. They're demanding international cooperation for bringing stability to the country and safeguarding the rights of Afghan people. We're going to cross over now to our correspondent, Yusuf Jalami, who is at the venue of the conference on Afghanistan in the Iranian capital, Tehran. Yusuf, please walk us through the key points of today's conference and what was said by the visiting foreign ministers, the respective foreign ministers of Afghanistan's neighbors.
Well, of course, Radia, it's a very important summit held in Tehran today on ways to tackle the ongoing crisis in Afghanistan. Six neighbors of Afghanistan plus Russia, of course, took part today in the summit. Russia and China took part in the summit via video conference, but the rest attended the conference in person. So the bottom line of the conference is Afghanistan needs to have a government that is all-encompassing, inclusive, reflecting the interests of all ethno-political parties and groups in Afghanistan. That is a stance that is shared by all of the countries attending the conference today. Afghanistan has witnessed violence for two decades, and now, after the withdrawal of the U.S. forces from Afghanistan and the takeover of Taliban, we also witnessed a series of terrorist attacks claimed by the Daesh terrorists affiliate in Afghanistan, known as the ISK, a terror group that was responsible for the killing of dozens, if not hundreds, of people in two mosques in Kandahar and Kunduz recently. So the participants here in the conference said that they do not tolerate more violence in Afghanistan. They, of course, attributed, especially Iran, the Iranian foreign minister, Hossein Amir Abdollahian, attributed the recent violence claimed by Daesh terrorists in Afghanistan as a way for the American officials to, of course, tell the world that without the American troops in Afghanistan, Afghanistan will not be safe. That is why they are supporting the Daesh terror groups to, of course, be again present in Afghanistan and carry out such terror attacks in Afghanistan, kill dozens of Shia Muslims in two mosques in a couple of weeks ago. So the conference aims to establish an all-inclusive government in Afghanistan and also to find ways to restore peace and stability in Afghanistan. So the conference wrapped up minutes ago, and now we are in a different hall in the Iranian Foreign Ministry, expecting the Iranian Foreign Minister, Hossein Amir Abdollahian, to brief us on the discussions that took place in the Foreign Ministry and to tell us about the latest agreements that have been achieved by different countries who participated in the conference. Now, of course, we have the chance to ask questions. The press conference is slated for for 10 minutes later. So we're going to be there in the conference asking questions from the Iranian Foreign Minister Hossein Amir Abdollahian about the conference, about the recent ways adopted by the Islamic Republic of Iran and this the five member and the five, of course, neighbors of Afghanistan about ways to, of course, restore peace and stability to the Afghan nation, and of course, about ways to establish an all-inclusive government in Afghanistan. We saw that the Chinese foreign minister and the Russian foreign minister also delivered an address via video conference. They were not attending the conference in person. They attended it via video conference. The Chinese foreign minister said that his country is willing to host the third round of talks about Afghanistan, because this Tehran summit is the continuation of earlier talks held in September between Afghanistan's neighbors, held in September, where the participants at that conference also read out a joint statement which called for an inclusive government. Afghanistan is a country that hosts different ethnic minorities and religious minorities, so the government needs to address the interests of all those minorities. Without such a government, the participants in the conference said that peace and stability will not come back to Afghanistan and the Afghan people.
All right, thanks a lot, Yusuf. That was our correspondent, Yusuf Jalali, joining us from the Iranian capital, Tehran, for further insights on the importance of today's conference. We're now bringing an author and geopolitical analyst, Mr. Greg Simons, who's joining us from Uppsala. Mr. Simons, welcome to the program. First of all, I'd like to get your thoughts on some of the points that were brought up by the visiting foreign ministers. An all-inclusive government in Afghanistan is a must. That was reiterated time and again by the visiting officials. And also, a lot of blame was put on the United States for the situation that Afghanistan is in right now. Do you see it in that light as well?
Well, I mean, this conference illustrates two key and critical points, if you want to look at it from a geopolitical perspective and a security perspective. One is the fact that this conference is taking place illustrates the declining power.
Dear listeners, welcome back. Here we interrupt the normal course of our program to have the live coverage of Iranian Foreign Minister Amir Abdollahian's speech. Let's take a listen.
To different parts of the world, the Afghan officials. So, are you prepared to hold this second round of intra-Afghan talks in order to build trust amongst different Afghan sides? Speaking of the Moscow format, there were special envoys attending that Moscow format. The first round of talks were held last week, and Mr. Kazemi Qomi, the Islamic Republic of Iran's special envoy in Afghan affairs, along Foreign Ministry's Director General for Political Affairs, took part in the talks. Any type of format that would help establishment of peace and security in Afghanistan will be supported by us. A format that would eliminate regional concerns, we consider that as positive. And we do thank Moscow for its initiative. Mr. Lavrov also attended this conference in Tehran today in virtual manner. We heard his remarks. We believe that regional formats, away from external interventions or foreigners warmongering interventions, such regional initiatives must be strengthened, particularly within the framework of Afghanistan's neighboring states. The Islamic Republic of Iran encourages all parties in Afghanistan to participate in the formation of an inclusive government there, and will continue efforts to realize this goal for finding a political solution. We heard the agreement reached between countries. So there's the economic crisis in Afghanistan. There are some contradictions among neighboring countries concerning Afghanistan. What is Iran's approach and view? And what is your assessment of the issue of Daesh? Firstly, all the efforts by the Islamic Republic of Iran are aimed at helping the people of Afghanistan. Secondly, we have left open our border crossing points in the most difficult days so that Iran's humanitarian aid, as well as aid by other countries, would be transferred to Afghanistan. And we did not halt our border exchanges so that there will not be shortage of food and medicine in Afghanistan. With regard to countering Daesh, we do offer consultation to the Afghan sides for combating terrorism, because that is linked with our national security due to the common borders. So we do continue our consultations with all the Afghan parties and sides. It was said there were requests from the Afghan parties to join this conference and attend this conference. Did you make any decision about adding any new parties to the conference? We did discuss it in the closed-door session, and there was no unanimity for participation of an EU representative. And regarding the ruling party in Afghanistan, if all ethnicities can participate, we came up with the primary consensus, an initial consensus, but we called on senior experts and special envoys for Afghanistan to discuss it. There's going to be a meeting in Beijing prior to the third round of talks, so they will discuss this with more details, but this was agreed upon to have the Afghan side as one of the parties, but the details will be decided by the special envoys for Afghanistan. As you said, one of the objectives of the conference was to help the people of Afghanistan, and Mr. Lavrov said that there is need for major projects to be implemented in the field of health in Afghanistan. So did you discuss the type of aid that can be delivered to Afghanistan? This was a serious matter raised in today's discussions, since we are getting closer to the winter season, and with respect to the tumultuous economic situation in Afghanistan that can cause even chaos in that country, jeopardizing security and tranquility there, and this situation can also move young people towards creating tendency among young people towards terrorist groups. So the neighboring countries, the international community, and the UN and other regional and international organizations must be mobilized in order to transfer humanitarian aid to Afghanistan. That was emphasized from the humanitarian perspective, and also from the view that if the situation is not controlled, it can cause a new wave of the influx of refugees moving towards neighboring countries.
America imposed 20-year war in Afghanistan, which brought a huge impact on the country and the people of Afghanistan. And today, the terrorism is still active there. So my question is, how will Iran and Afghanistan's neighboring countries deal with terrorism or the other problems there? And what kind of further plan the neighboring countries have to help Afghanistan to return to peace and stability? Thank you.
Firstly, we hold the U.S. accountable for the hardships of the Afghan people. At the political level, the Islamic Republic of Iran supports the formation of an inclusive government, as I emphasized, in order to improve people's livelihood in Afghanistan. We did make use of border facilities, and in order to maintain security and tranquility there, we tried to bring closer together the views of all Afghan groups. But we should accept that the Taliban is the reality there, and has become the ruling party there. So we should take steps for the formation of an inclusive government there. With respect to the recent explosions in Qunduz and Qandahar, what measure did you have consultations with the Taliban for maintaining the security of the Shiites there? We have attached importance to the establishment of security. We address the ruling party in Afghanistan for maintaining the security of all Afghan people, including Shiites, who were targeted by Daesh, and
خسته نباشید به شما و همه همکارانتون این یکی دو روز خیلی زحمت کشیدیم. می‌خواستم بپرسم که نشسته چقدر در نشستی که امروز داشتید جمهوری اسلامی ایران تونستش
To what extent did the Islamic Republic of Iran realize the goals it pursued in the course of the conference? What is the percentage of your success in this conference? Did you come up with relative consensus with other countries? And what other measures are to be taken for the formation of an inclusive government? So we did express our stances. We are conveying this message that we attach importance to the condition in Afghanistan, the people, the political future of Afghanistan. These were the goals that we pursued, and we have to some extent managed to communicate this message from Tehran as the neighbor of Afghanistan. We try to minimize any possible rift between the neighboring states with regard to the abuse towards Afghanistan. And we try to pursue the right political path in line with the interests of Afghanistan, the neighboring countries, including the Islamic Republic of Iran. The foreign minister's assessment was that they had the perception that they have come up with a concrete conclusion, and we can, with a loud voice, reflect the message of this conference.
سلام وزیر از عرب ممنون میشم بفرمایید آیا در آینده نزدیک آقای رافائل گروسی قرار است سفری به ایران
Is Mr. Rafael Grossi going to take a trip to Iran in the near future?
برنامه برای ملاقات با ایشون تعارف دیده اید
Do you have any plans for meeting him?
آقای گروسی رو به ایران
We do not want to create any excitement with respect to Mr. Grossi's visit to Iran or just intertwine it with the nuclear issue. We have a general agreement between the IAEA and Iran's Atomic Energy Organization, so there are agreements for visit by Dr. Islami visiting the agency or Mr. Garusi visiting Tehran. He will travel to Tehran. That is, the trip is definite, but the details about the timing is not a matter of importance. So I think we can just go on for another 5 minutes.
دكتور كما تعلمون أن السيد علي باقري مشاوركم للشؤون السياسية يتواجد الآن في بروكسل للقاء مساعد مسؤول السياسة الخارجية في الاتحاد الأوروبي إنريكي مورا هل ما قصد إيران من التفاوض بشكل مباشر مع الأوروبيين وترفض حاليا على الأقل في الوقت الراهن الذهاب للاجتماع مع مجموعة 4+1 والولايات المتحدة الأمريكية في فيينا هل هو تغيير في استراتيجية التفاوض الإيراني أم أن هي خطة أولية قبل الذهاب إلى فيينا
We started our nuclear talks 2 weeks ago in Tehran, talks between Foreign Ministry's Deputy for Political Affairs and Mr. Mora. The talks have started and today Dr. Bagheri is in Brussels to complete those negotiations. Speaking of Mr. Mora and the EU coordinator, we do discuss the fact that when we are going to enter new talks how should we negotiate and how should we concentrate on matters so that all the parties be able in the shortest period of time return to their full commitments based on the JCPOA. Secondly, their return to the JCPOA is not a very important achievement for us. How all the parties returning to their commitments, how will they show that JCPOA-related sanctions against the Islamic Republic of Iran will be lifted. We do not want to enter talks from the deadlock point in Vienna talks, but the format in Vienna, we do accept the format in Vienna talks. And after assessing today's negotiations, we will decide about the date for entering talks with the 4 plus 1. It's not going to be late, and this will happen very soon. And we will resume talks with the 4 plus 1. Almost all questions were asked. I wish to ask about Mr. Erdogan meeting Mr. Ilham Aliyev. Mr. Aliyev has told him that his country has no special relations with Israel, and it is Iran that must change its behavior towards Azerbaijan. What is Iran's reaction? An official in Azerbaijan saying that has no relations with the usurper Zionist regime. That's the good part of your question. Azerbaijan is the neighbor of the Islamic Republic of Iran despite the ups and downs. Within the framework of media tensions, mostly expressed by the Azeri officials, we have had regular contacts with the Azerbaijani foreign minister. Now that we are talking with each other, that we have overcome the media tensions, our transit truck drivers that were arrested, they have returned to the country, and we decided to tread the right path for cooperation. We have defined certain indices, and I believe that our relations will continue without tension, and the problems facing both countries will be gradually eliminated. The 13th administration's view towards neighbors is serious cooperation, and Azerbaijan is one of these neighbors, and we're going to have positive and constructive cooperation within this policy, and hopefully we'll be able to benefit from the existing capacities. So next month there's going to be the ECO summit meeting in Ashgabat. Hopefully there's going to be the possibility for both head of states to meet there. Regarding talks between Mr. Baghri and Mr. Mora, will Mr. Baghri announce any or set any date? Is it clear from which point the talks will be resumed? And speaking of the Vienna format, does it mean that the U.S. will not be present in the talks? So we're going to have an assessment of the talks tonight, then we will decide. We will decide about the date of the talks, or will there be need for more consultations upon his return to Tehran? Our main main format is negotiating with 4 plus 1, but the marginal matters are related to the other side, to see how to indirectly pursue that, the return to the deal and full implementation of the commitments.
فيما يتعلق بالاتفاق النووي، لأن هناك حملة في الآونة الأخيرة وعند يعني عندما استلم سيادة الرئيس رئيسي سلطة الحكم حملة غربية إعلامية لا غير لها مثيل، يعني يتهمونه بأنه مجرم حرب وإلى آخره وإلى آخره. هل تعتقدون بأن ذلك سوف يؤثر على المحادثات وعلى اتفاق ما قريبا؟ يعني
در خصوص پیشبینی هر گونه توافق جدید یا
concerning any new agreement or return to their commitments, as I have said in interviews with American media in New York, the section related to the U.S., U.S. President Biden must show that there is a serious will for a return to the nuclear deal. We are not very eager about just a mere return of the U.S. to the deal. What matters is the result of such a return, whether it's going to be to the benefit of the Islamic Republic of Iran or not. Will it be aimed at lifting the sanctions or creating new restrictions? We, based on U.S. officials in New York, we have the assumption that Biden has a good will. So we said we asked $10 billion of Iranian assets to be released at the time of the pandemic. I personally believe that if Mr. Biden has a serious will, this must be shown in practice, and in this way we must be able to believe that the Americans are serious for lifting up sanctions. But what is determining is the negotiation table and the art of diplomacy by the Iranian side and the other parties attending the negotiations. So it depends on the process of talks, the intentions and the seriousness of the other parties to see whether we can come up with any results. We are serious. If all the parties return to their full commitments, we will also return to our full commitments. The 13th administration is a result-oriented and a pragmatic administration, so it's more important for us to come up with results rather than just speak in a beautiful manner. Iran is right now hosting more than 3 million Afghan refugees. These are the legal figures announced. So you're also Iran is also facing the sanctions. So you are in need of help or just hosting these refugees. Did you discuss this issue? What sort of assistance can Iran receive? Does Iran is in need of financial aid, or will it be okay and good for other countries to also host these refugees? One of the issues raised during the closed session was emphasis on the Afghan people's assets and money that have to be released by foreign banks. because the civil servants in Afghanistan have not received salaries for 3 months now, and this even can cause social chaos. So one of the emphasis by the conference is that the assets must be offered to the Afghan people in order to overcome some of the challenges.
آقای وزیر، من از ساعت 9 صبح تا الان اینجا منتظرم، قرار بوده سوالامو بپرسم، مثل اینکه تو لیستم نیستم. این اولین باریه که بنده و شما رو برو هم قرار میگیریم. اگه سوال آخر
I've been waiting here since 9 a.m. if it's possible
آخر شما بپرسید، بعد اگه ایشون کلامشون درست بود ایشون هم بشین یه وقت بدید.
If it's possible, let me ask the last question.
بقیه رو میخواید من تستی جواب بدم؟ بله یا خیر؟ بفرمایید.
آقای جلالی از شبکه پرستی.
Mr. Jalali from Press TV. American media have claimed that the Islamic Republic of Iran has rejected the offer for talks with the representatives of Britain, France and Germany. This was rejected. It was said that the Islamic Republic of Iran has voiced readiness to hold talks. Your views on this issue? The three European countries of Britain, France and Germany have an improper approach from our view. Instead of meeting us in their national capacity, in certain issues, including the nuclear issue, they request a meeting attended by three ambassadors with one Iranian official. And the more improper aspect is that after these meetings, a joint statement is released and they express their views in a unilateral manner. Either in Brussels or in Tehran,
bilateral va do janebe va Alman
wa
France
istiqbal do welcome bilateral talks with France, Britain and Germany, but talks with three European countries regarding the nuclear issue that can take place within the framework of 4+1. That means alongside representatives of Russia and China that are our negotiating party for talks. Thank you very much. Mr. Khatibzadeh will later respond to other questions. I also thank you for your presence here since morning, and your efforts are more valuable than what we do because you are reflecting the news. I believe that we do 20% of the job in the field of diplomacy. 80% is done by you because you are properly reflecting the developments. I wish you all the best.
Well, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, what you heard was the live coverage of the speech of Iranian Foreign Minister Hossein Amir Abdullahian during a press conference after Tehran conference on Afghanistan's neighbors. Many thanks for being with us.
There are all kinds of production units in the country. Some manufacture goods we use every day, such as home appliances, automobiles, or apparel, just to name a few. Others produce industrial machinery or even the energy required to power up industrial units. There are also other industrial facilities that produce iron or steel. But one thing all these fields of work have in common is the use of advanced technology used for production. Advanced technology has never been more important than it is today with the fast pace of industry expansion in the country.
Oh, how's it going? Welcome to another edition of Bazaar, your weekly program that analyzes various industries, markets, profits, and all sorts of things that connect us nationally and internationally. This week, we will explore the manufacturing industry for research-based technologies. We will uncover how companies use the abundant raw material available in the country to produce goods, saving the country billions on imports. Time to enter today's Bazaar.
We want to take a particular look at some of the machines and technology that production units use. So, our journey took us to Damande Incorporated, which was established over five decades ago. From its humble beginnings, this company has grown into a well-established name for fans and blowers. The company is one of the largest manufacturers of electromotors and heating and cooling systems in the West Asian region. It makes over hundreds of types of ventilation systems, original equipment parts, and heating and cooling fans. Basically, fans and blowers are used to move air, gas, or other particles. Its largest fan is the high-tech roof mount centrifugal fan, which is typically used in factories for ventilation. Its products are used in homes, factories, tunnels, and industrial-scale settings. This company has a vast production unit that is located on the outskirts of the capital city, Tehran, and it can produce well over 10,000 units per day and nearly 3 million units annually. Fans are designed by highly experienced mechanical engineers based on the type of application of the fan. Also, this company employs hundreds of other highly specialized personnel.
There are thousands of different fans and blowers in the market for different applications. For instance, kitchen ovens use fans for convection to produce circulating air. In other places, fans are used for ventilation in office buildings or indoor car parks. In general, Iran has little need to import fans unless they are used for special purposes such as power plants or in the oil refining industries.
All manufacturing steps from start to finish are completed at its production facilities. The majority of raw material needed to produce these items are also domestically purchased. However, there is a small percentage of material that is imported for certain specialized fans. This company is registered and certified by Iran's Industrial Research and Standard Institute and has received numerous awards for its high-quality products. It is certified by international standardization bodies and has received various ISO certification for management and quality. One of the competitive advantages of this manufacturer is its decades of experience. This has allowed it to refine its products over the years to produce dependable items with the highest quality. This manufacturer has been exporting its fans and blowers to Central Asia and most neighboring countries, among many others. This company has never stopped expanding throughout the years. It might be interesting to know that this company has been operating throughout several historical eras. It remained active before and during the Islamic Revolution and the 8 years of imposed war with Iraq. And it has continued its activity even through tough imposed economic sanctions. It has been able to overcome these challenges, which it sees as growth opportunities.
Iran is a country that is rich in natural reserves. It is fully able to supply raw materials such as steel and petrochemical products to domestic industries. In fact, Iran's steel mills produced over 20 million tons of steel in the first 8 months of this year. This shows an almost 10% increase in productions since 2020 and a growing domestic demand.
Iran ranks as the world's 10th biggest crude steel producer by a recent report by the World Steel Association. China was the top producer of steel, followed by India, Japan, and the United States. Based on figures from Iran's Steel Producers Association, around 15 million tons worth $7 billion of steel can be exported annually. The Iranian steel industry has been constantly developing over the past years. This is despite all the pressures and obstacles created by outside forces like the US sanctions and the coronavirus outbreak. On another note, Iran is also a large producer of petrochemical products as well. The country has a capacity to produce some 60 million tons worth of petrochemical products. That's based on figures from the Iranian Oil, Gas and Petrochemical Products Exporters Union. According to these statistics, around 28 million tons of these products were produced last year. Of this amount, around 8 million tons were domestically consumed, and 20 million tons were exported to countries around the world. Industry associations estimate that Iran can potentially export $50 billion worth of these items each year. So, in terms of raw material, Iranian manufacturers are mostly dependent on local productions of raw material to make their products. But not all products are equal. Some require more research and development to add value, which increases their sales profits. These items are usually advanced technologies that are created to serve very special needs in the industry. The number of knowledge-based companies has increased over the years with a strong engineering base in the country. If there were 50 high-tech firms in 2013, now there are 125 times more than that number in 2021. Currently, there are over 6,200 high-tech firms and knowledge-based companies across the country. The company we mentioned earlier in the program is just one example of a diverse range of high-tech manufacturers. By indigenizing various technologies to meet domestic needs, these companies have saved the country millions in capital flight. Based on statistics from the Science and Technology Office of the Vice Presidency, some 40 knowledge-based companies are listed in the stock market. This is part of an initiative implemented by the government to increase capital in support of hard work of knowledge-based manufacturers. Also, the Central Bank of Iran has distributed some $3 billion in loans to high-tech firms and research companies to help facilitate their growth. Other plans are underway, with the office incorporating with the Ministry of Foreign Affairs to boost exports of technology and production know-how. Exports are projected to reach pre-sanctions level with a value of over $1 billion by the end of this year. That's according to the Vice Presidential Office for Science and Technology.
Well, it is time for me to take a break and pass the action over to my good friend and colleague who will bring to you an educational report.
It was around 2,000 years ago when paper was first invented, something which marked man's giant leap in the learning process, and allowed ideas to be recorded and easily passed on to others. Today, educational supplies are not limited to papers, and companies like EEI are working on daily basis to design stuff that turn learning into a hobby. Stay with me to learn more about this Iranian company.
Educational Equipment Industries Company, or shortly EEI, was launched in 1974. It is a leading designer, manufacturer, and a distributor of educational and training instruments for schools, universities, and vocational training centers in Iran. It also produces scientific entertainment games and training toys and designs brain teasers for out-of-class activities. Learning is easier with games. This is one of the mottos of the company. EEI produces toys that make complicated scientific subjects easier to grasp for children. with a dedicated R&D team constantly monitoring the market. Educational Equipment Industries Company tries to stay up to date and tap into technological advances to produce smarter products. The company tries to catch up with modern trends in education to tailor its products to modern demands. For example, over the past decades, it has been producing conventional microscope, but now it is producing this digital microscope, which displays the image on a monitor and allows both users and the audience to view the image immediately and analyze it. With such a diverse array of educational supplies, the ambitious company says it is eyeing for a larger market by scouting for international clients. Beside its bid to gain worldwide recognition, EEI tries to take education to the next level by exploring innovative ways to facilitate learning. It is planning to launch a production line of educational tablets that makes school material fun to learn. With an experience stretching for half a century, the Iranian brand says it commits itself to adapting to modern trends in education. It says this is to fulfill its goal of making learning an enjoyable experience for all generations.
Many thanks for that wonderful adventure. Great stuff. So let's dive right into some news and trends regarding Iran's high-tech industries and manufacturers. One of the current trends we are seeing is the government's keenness to help knowledge-based companies increase their exports. The Science and Technology Office has launched several plans and programs that provide special support to these companies.
One of the biggest programs in the works is to help companies with standardizations. This program assesses compatibility of Iranian knowledge-based products with global markets through the World Trade Organization standards. The plan also aims to attract foreign investment and the participation of Iranians who live abroad. Government officials and industry participants say this is a significant step which keeps Iranian products relevant in the international arena.
The atmosphere of Iran's tech industries is buzzing with growth, and Iran is looking to strengthen its regional collaborations in the field of information and communications technologies, or ICT.
Iran's ICT minister participated in the annual Transportation and Communication Forum in Turkey this year. Issa Zarepour introduced several Iranian ICT products and talented tech firms at the forum. The minister also signed an agreement with his Turkish counterpart to implement joint projects for cybersecurity measures and other ICT developments. Other topics that were discussed included border transit and the establishment of joint border data centers. The forum centered around the theme of logistics mobility digitalization. It was attended by representatives from 55 countries worldwide.
A major Iranian copper producer has offered large investments to companies in the field of high-tech manufacturing to upgrade its aging facilities.
The goal is to encourage tech firms and startups to present innovative solutions to the sector's age-old technological gaps. This initiative will help introduce domestic industries with tech investment opportunities, which will also focus on the tech ecosystem's target markets. The copper producer says incorporating cutting-edge technologies will have a positive direct impact on other fields. So far, 7 contracts worth $2 million have been signed with tech companies and the copper producer. This investment plan was also facilitated by Iran's National Innovation Fund.
By the way, and I want to tell you about Iran's drug production on this episode of Bazaar. Iran has been under heavy sanctions, yes, But the country's drug production capacity is really high. Different factories with an impressively high production capacity are at work. Some make up to 200 types of medicine, some of which are produced under foreign licenses in Iran. Apart from regular medicines such as antibiotics and over-the-counter painkillers, Iran has managed to enter the realm of complex medicine, such as radiopharmaceuticals and biologic drugs for special illnesses. To familiarize you with these realms, we paid a visit to Osve Company.
We're talking an area on Tehran's outskirts, an area packed with factories, automobile factories, and pharmaceutical, petrochemical, and clothes factories, among others. It's an area to the west of Tehran, close to Alborz province. Our intended factory is also on a road to Alborz province, the Osve Pharmaceutical Factory, with a varied range of drugs to produce. Osve is a public stock company. It was established as early as 1966, but it has managed to adapt to new research and findings. For example, a medicine this company is proud to have produced in Iran is Deferasirox. Its non-generic name is Osvarol, and what it does is it reduces blood iron levels for patients in need of long blood transfusions, such as patients suffering from thalassemia or chronic low blood counts. It makes medicine to control blood pressure and to cure migraine, insomnia and depression, nephrology, diabetes and blood lipids. It also makes various vitamins. A common ailment among Iranians is high blood pressure due to their high levels of salt consumption and sedentary lifestyles. A third of Iranians over 30 suffer from this. At least 100,000 people allegedly die from high blood pressure each year. The health ministry has done a lot to control this, but 40% of people with high blood pressure don't even know they have it. But what has Osve done for those suffering from it?
You are all aware not everyone exercises to need just dietary supplements. Many an ailment can be prevented with a little exercise, but too many people are too busy for that. There are those illnesses that have nothing to do with exercise, however, but are hereditary. For those, plenty of medicine is needed. But drug consumption is generally high in Iran, such that Iran ranks 20 among countries of the world, with each Iranian annually consuming 4 times as much medicine as the world standard. Iran, with its 80 million population, consumes as much medicine as China, with its population of 1.3 billion. But does this mean Iranians get ill more often? No, actually. It's just that their use of drugs is unregulated. And to meet their demand, Iran has plenty of pharmaceutical factories active in research and expansion and quality production. They even export some of their items manufactured.
Going by the statistics of Iran's Food and Drug Administration, about 95% of drugs required domestically are produced in Iran. In the early days of the Islamic Revolution, Iran produced only about 500 drugs. But now, this country's producing 3,000 drugs in 4,000 pharmaceutical variations. Iran has at present 15 pharmaceutical faculties, which train scores of pharmacists and researchers each year. Also, over 100 drug distributing companies are active in Iran today. In spite of the glittering statistics, however, there are those who say some 40% of the raw material for these drugs are imported from mainly India. But the Ministry of Health counts these drugs as part of the same 95% domestic produce. And there are the many who believe it's altogether irrelevant where the raw material comes from, because the art of pharmacology is to know how to mix those raw materials. Also, to domestically produce all the raw material needed may not even be cost efficient. The biggest obstacle to the Iranian industry, such as the pharmaceutical industries, is cruel US sanctions. US authorities have time and again stressed that Iran's pharmaceutical sector is exempt from sanctions. But imposing sanctions on the finance and money transfer sector is practically as good as boycotting the pharmaceutical sector. This hypocritical act by both Democrat and Republican US officials has caused hundreds of patients to die. Patients
whose medicine Iran has not yet managed.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.